is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site covering the Arizona Cardinals. And with me, as is pretty much always the case, especially during the season, is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com and one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. We are now officially in the regular season, and oof, what a stinker of an opener. I don't think that could have gone, honestly. There were, for aside from losing players to injury, I don't know if they could have had a worse scenario for how things played out in week one.
Yeah, and I mean, really, that's it. Like, injuries. That was the only thing that could have possibly made the situation worse than it was. It was just it seemed like a team, and maybe we criticized Cliff and the staff for not, you know, doing more in the preseason, but it seemed like a team that wasn't ready for the regular season versus a team that is in mid-season form getting ready to go on a Super Bowl run. I mean, that's literally what it kind of like looked like when you kind of run it back and look at it again. You're like, oh, one team was definitely way more ready than the other team.
Yeah, totally. This is episode 372. We're going to talk about the Cardinals 44-21 loss to, and believe it, it, as you can say that, a 44-21 loss that didn't feel as close as it was. And it was a blowout. So we're going to talk about that in this show. What went wrong? What's our level of concern? Because obviously, you know, that's a terrible way to start the season. Was there anything good? We'll discuss if there are any moves the Cardinals need to make moving forward. And then we'll go ahead and preview their week two matchup that they have against the Las Vegas Raiders in week two on the road this coming weekend. So, you know, rewind a little bit. The Cardinals enter the game, and I don't know what it was, but it just seemed, with all the focus to try to get guys healthy to the regular season, we're all thwarted by calf injuries and this and that. They enter the week, Justin Pugh doesn't end up playing, then their backup Cody Ford gets hurt, Rondale Moore gets hurt with a hamstring injury that's going to keep him out multiple weeks. I don't know how you have that happen, enter the week, but...
Well, and it's interesting because, you know, I even mentioned it, but, like, that's been the criticism, right? They weren't prepared. And the guys that ended up getting injured, you know,
they're like, all guys that you wanted to protect, and
right?
They protected them, and then they get hurt like right after the preseason is over. Zach Ertz, he got a calf strain that he aggravated like early in camp, and then he had a setback. JJ Watt, you know, he's healthy all of camp. He catches COVID, and then, like, on his first practice back, he hurts his calf. Colt McCoy goes on IR because of a calf injury. Rondale Moore, for whom the Cardinals seem to have a game plan built around, dinks his hamstring on Thursday, and so they've already got their game plan set. It was just, you know, Kansas City was just so good. It was like the Cardinals had no answer for them defensively, and then offensively they didn't get started. They were going to have to play a nearly perfect game plan offensively, and they fell behind 14-0 in the first quarter, and that kind of did them in. when they, so they got some life, and then they had a chance to make it a game, and they just, they, it was, cause the Cardinals are, their offense is a rhythm offense, so they need things to happen, they need things to be on schedule, and three and outs really are bad for them, you know. If they can get one first down, it feels like they can get into rhythm and then they get moving. But three and out kind of destroys everything. That's how they started the game. They started a game with a three and out after they gave up a touchdown. They gave up another touchdown. And then the Cardinals got into rhythm, but the defense just was completely overmatched. There was so much not to like. Now, granted, you know, they were down cornerbacks because, you know, they lost Antonio Hamilton to the Burns. Trayvon Mullen, the guy they traded for, had a toe injury that he hadn't recovered from, so he wasn't ready to play. And then J.J. Watt gets hurt. And so you're left shorthanded in terms of cornerbacks. And then you didn't stop. You didn't get stops early. They didn't get stops. And there were two major things. They didn't sack. They didn't get a sack of Patrick McCombs. They did hit him a few times. They didn't get any sacks. And they didn't get their hands on balls. I mean, Marco Wilson got his hands on the ball twice, and that was it.
Yeah, and it was just, I mean, it was just one of those situations, like you said, where it never, there was no rhythm. There was nothing to it. And every time they looked like they were getting ready to get back in it, they either had
a little thing, whether it was let's go for that fourth down play, or when Legarius Sneed goes unblocked and takes down Kyler Murray like a nothing. You know, there was the social media, the TikTok that went around talking about and was griping about Kyler and the study contract. He should have looked over there. He didn't even look. Cliff said there was a protection that should have picked up. He should have hit, you know, if he gets that possessed, if that protection is picked up and Sneed is blocked, Hollywood's wide open down the field. On a third down and one, when they're in position. There, that wasn't at the end of the half, and they could have gone for the field goal, but philosophically, if we've known anything about Cliff Kingsbury in year four, especially when he knows he's going against a team that you're going to need points on, he's going to go for it every time, and he was adamant about that after the game. He's like, no, we were going to go for it. You can't settle for field goals against a team like this. They had the play. There was a mistake. There was a mental error. And then on the other one, on the third down, you know, Greg Dortch, like, Kyler's got Dortch down the field. He trips. He takes a shot at Hollywood down the field. It was a beautiful throw. Hollywood looks over the wrong shoulder, so he doesn't adjust quick enough. It was just little things that compounded because the defense wasn't. The Cardinals need their offense to be great this year, at least how things are currently constructed. They need the offense to be great so that the defense doesn't have to be. And especially, again, against the Chiefs, where the defense was going to barely be able to do anything, that offense needed to be great. And the offense was unable to be great, mainly because you had Sean Harlow starting at left guard, and Zach Ertz was being limited in his playing time because come back with a calf injury. And the guy that Rondell Moore, it would appear that the game plan was built around him. And instead you had Greg Dortch, who's been productive, but he's not the player that Rondell Moore is.
Yeah, and we just saw it. I mean, you know, and our buddy Sully Chiefs made fun of it. I mean, he did. He's like, it's interesting to go in with an offensive game plan of Greg Dortch to beat the Chiefs, and what did you get? Like you said, you ended up with. What happened? And Dortch didn't play bad, but you can just see he lacks the juice that a guy.
Like, you look at his, you know, his testing numbers, quickness he has in spades, breakaway speed he doesn't have.
Right. And so, like, he just wasn't able to, he just was never able to create problems for the defense that caused them to that caused them to shift from their cover two, which would have opened things up for Marquise Brown. And so the way it works is in a cover two, the only places you really get shots then are, you know, underneath, and then you got to get them in what they call the, you know, the cover two holes. And that's about 15 to 17 yards down the sideline. And if you look back, that's where AJ Green and Marquise Brown, you know, were being targeted and had their, you know, their lone catches. And so that was the problem, is you needed somebody that could break that cover two. Zach Ertz clearly wasn't going to do it in that game, just from his limited physical ability. You know, Cliff addressed the Trey McBride not being active thing. I have other theories that we can get into later, but you know, when you don't have that middle of the field option, and then all of a sudden you don't have the guy, like you said, that you kind of built the game plan around in Rondale Moore, and you're instead going with a guy that's probably, you know, maybe 60% of what Rondale Moore can give you, it becomes an issue, and you saw what the issue was. And like you said, they were just never able to get it going. And I thought they got into a better rhythm in the second half and obviously played a little bit better offensively. But that's, like you said, that's going to be the big thing, is that they can't get down and have to make up that much ground, especially when they are shorthanded.
And the other thing is, you see, as we saw down the stretch last year, just how much that the defense really relies on J.J. Watt. And that's kind of a scary proposition. I mean, obviously, when you sign a guy to the amount of money that the Cardinals did, you are counting on him. I mean, you're building a defense kind of around him, because that's kind of what you do with an intact player. But that defense is something, especially the interior. It is just a different animal when JJ isn't there. And
it really is. And you know, they just have no juice. I mean, that's just the best way to put it. And
they're a bunch of almost, like, the Cardinals hit Patrick Mahomes, I think, six times, and they almost had guys, like, almost Seven. Had guys, they almost had guys at the line of scrimmage, and those almost, especially, you can't do almost against the Chiefs.
No, but that's also the thing, man. I mean, you look at it, like, 70 snaps, 44 passes, and you only hit him seven times, and you only hurry him, you know, 13 times. So literally on 60% of his passes, he had no pressure. And then all of a sudden, your inability to cover comes into play as well, right? Because all of a sudden, now you're asking average to maybe below average corners to cover for 4+ seconds. And that's just a recipe for disaster. I mean, that's the thing, is Patrick Mahomes doesn't need that much time to beat you, but when he has that much time, he's going to play like he did on Sunday.
I mean, there's one thing that's gone out, you know, on social media. Analysts have talked about this. The Cardinals made a concerted effort to blitz. They blitzed Mahomes on 54% of his dropbacks, and he completely toasted them. And philosophically, if you look at the personnel that they had, I can see why Vance Joseph said, I ain't got a choice, because if we don't, he's going to pick us apart. But if we do, maybe we get home on him. Do you think that was kind of the case that going into it that they, because there are analysts saying that if there's one thing like that, the Chiefs offense invites the blitz and it's kind of built that way. And the way to beat Mahomes is to not blitz him. Did you feel that, would you say that probably Vance felt like the only way his defense was going to succeed was by creating or trying to fabricate and generate pressure with blitzes?
Well, especially when you're talking about that Marcus Golden and Dennis Gardeck were only in for, you know, 16 and 14 pass rushing attempts respectively. And they're your two best pass rushers coming into the season. Isaiah Simmons had six pass rushes. He did a nice job again, getting some pressure on those. Zach Allen wasn't bad, but for the most part, like the guys that you're expecting to carry your pass rush in Gardeck and Golden didn't, I mean, again, 44 attempts. Golden had 16 pass rushes. Gardeck had 14. Like, it was almost like they were seeing what the other guys could bring, knowing that it was going to be a tall task this week. So, you know, you look at it overall, it was a it was a bad game. I mean, there's no other way around it. But I think it's also a game that I don't want to say purposely let happen like that, but to the point where they were using it to find out, test some things, you know, before they move forward what they hope is with good health.
Yeah, totally. So coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the Becerra Cardinals talk on the web. Let's come back and talk about our level of concern with this team after 1 week. It is naturally a week of overreactions, but how concerned are we? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, best of Cardinals talk on the web. Level of concern. It feels like, and it's very easy to do. It is what you do on social media and on the radio and on the internet, is you go to that bad place very quickly. At the same time, a team that faded down the stretch, it's facing adversity and needs to, you know, especially knowing how they finished seasons typically, need them get a good start. This feels disastrous and makes you want to feel like, oh, this team is going to be bad. But if we take a step back, what is your actual level of concern for this team moving forward?
I mean, I think the only concern is if they can get healthy. If they're not healthy, we see that they're not a good team. But if they are healthy, we don't really know what they are. We had last year to know that they're not a bad team by any stretch of the imagination. So that's where I'm at right now, is like when Justin Pugh is back, when Zach Ertz can go more than, you know, 35 snaps, when Rondell Moore is out there, or they have a week to game plan without Rondell Moore, you know, all of those things is, and then of course, like you said, the Watt situation, all of those things matter more. And so I can't be overly concerned until I see those guys, or the vice versa, we know that those guys won't be able to get back, if that makes sense. Like,
right.
Like, obviously, if it's a week-to-week thing for 7 weeks and then they're 2-5 or 1-6, that's one thing. But, like, if they're healthy, that's what I'm – you know, that's when I'll judge it. If they're unable to be healthy, then, like I said, we know that they're clearly just not a very good team.
Right. And especially going against, so we have to remember the context. When you, Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, one, now they are incredible with time. Whether it's coming off of a bye or starting the season, they are nearly unstoppable. It's a Chiefs team that's expected to compete for a Super Bowl.
Isn't Andy Reid in Kansas City undefeated in opening days?
I don't know. I don't. So Mahomes is now 5-0. I don't know if that extends to Reid or not. I have to do a little.
Okay, so they're 8-1.
Oh my gosh.
So that's what I'm saying.
And you probably can pull up that same sort of stat because Andy Reid is also amazing after bye weeks. When you give him extra time to prepare, they're really good.
Right, and so that's the thing you look at. So, yeah, their one loss was in with Andy Reid as the coach, was in 2014. And again, we're not making excuses. We're just talking about a reality of the situation. You know, a Chiefs team that was 11-5, right? They won week one. A Chiefs team that was 11-5 again in 2015, they won week one. Then they lost literally the next five games. So like, it doesn't matter. I don't want to say it doesn't matter, but like it literally is one of those situations where you look at it and you go, okay, this is one of, like Jeff said, the best game one teams or game one coaches in NFL history. Two, this is the team, like for me, that I picked to win the Super Bowl this year.
Right. Like, the Chiefs are so good.
So like I look at it and I go, you know, yeah, they lost. It sucks. Really sucks. They've been to four consecutive AFC championship games. They went to two Super Bowls. They're just a great team. And when you have a Hall of Fame coach and quarterback, you know, I don't want to say they're the New England Patriots now, but because they haven't won enough Super Bowls, but like they're close to that.
They've been to the playoffs, what is it, seven straight years?
Well, that's what I said. With Mahomes as the starter, they've literally gone to the AFC Championship game
every single year.
Every year. So like,
and they were a playoff contender consistently with Alex Smith as a quarterback.
Right. And so like, yes, it is a bad, bad loss. Like, let's not sugarcoat it. Let's not, you know, anything else. But, you know, you look at last year, the
Cardinals
New Orleans
beat down the Titans.
Yeah,
in week one.
The New Orleans Saints
blew the doors off of the Packers and Aaron Rodgers, and everyone was worried that Rodgers was, you know, tanking the season, or that, you know, his mind wasn't in the game. And both those teams ended up being the number one seed. Aaron Rodgers, you know, another MVP season. I mean, went one week, and it's hard. It's hard to, like, you want to do it, but also week one is the one week you really don't know anything about any team because of the time to prepare. From a betting perspective, the work that I do on Sportsbook Wired, I do handicapping games. That's something I actually heavily look at, especially in week one, is home teams. Whether it's week one, week two, home openers, give something extra to the home team. Look at what happened to the Bears. The Bears being the 49ers, even though they had 204 yards of offense, they still managed to beat the 49ers. They had a little extra. Granted, I'm fading the Niners a lot this year. Seattle against Denver. I didn't believe, and I should have thought about that. I should have figured that they would be tougher against the Broncos and Russell Wilson in that opener. You look at Minnesota against Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. Do we really think that the Packers, that the Vikings are going to be what they did to the Packers for the rest of the year? I think we all know that's probably not going to be the case. They have the talent to do it, but they do have a very inconsistent. They've got a quarterback who's good, but is he good? And so you look at some of these wins across the NFL, and week one and week two do bring about the most, I believe, aberrations in terms of big picture.
Well, and we haven't even talked about it. Look at how bad the Rams looked.
Oh my gosh, yes, they were atrocious. That's, I mean, that's another reason why the level of concern isn't that high. The NFC West, the only team that won was Seattle, and even though they won, no one's worried about Seattle winning that division.
Right. And so
even with the one win.
Yeah, and you look at it, so like you look at it, you chalk it up, it's 1 week. Now, you know, obviously the concern becomes they have to play better this week, which we'll get to, but they also have to show that they're a team that can play better. And that's just kind of where you're at right now. I mean, I don't know how else to put it other than, yes, the loss was disappointing, but it also is 1 week in a 17 game season where you now looks like play in one of the higher question marked divisions in the NFL.
All right. Coming up next on the Rise Up C-Rip podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Was there anything good to take away from that game? If anything, what are the silver linings, the bright spots? That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, special of Cardinals talk on the web. It's hard to think that there was anything good out of that game, but I feel like there were some silver linings. And I think if there was one thing, and maybe it kind of connects to what we were suggesting, is that they kind of knew, and it wasn't mailed in, but it was kind of understood, oh, this is going to be the Cardinals we have seen from in years past, whether it's Kyler, especially getting down early, there's pressing. There's one thing I did not get the feeling that the Cardinals pressed at all. They weren't successful, but had a couple of plays gone their way, they would have put themselves back in the game. And oftentimes when they fall behind like that, things steamroll and it feels like they go into bad decisions. And the Cardinals didn't turn the ball over at all. And that is, you know, what you normally see. If your team gets down a couple of scores, they're going to press and they're going to turn the ball over. And they didn't do that. So I think if there's one thing, the composure that they had despite the situation was encouraging to me. And I thought, despite everything, I thought Kyler had a pretty dang good game, how he managed things and actually how he played. He was a bright spot to me.
Yeah, I don't think there's any, like, I thought Kyler did a nice job. So, like, we can break this down, offense and defense, even though it doesn't seem, like you said, like there's a lot of positives. I thought Kyler did a nice job. I was pleasantly surprised with Kelvin, DJ, and Will in the pass blocking sets. Sean Harlow is a really nice guy. He works really hard. He's just proven he's not an NFL caliber player. Like, I don't know how else to put it, but like he was basically awful is the best way to put it for in this game.
He in terms of the raw numbers and 35 pass rushing snaps, he allowed 5 pressures. I couldn't find it. My son, he pointed out, like, I don't know if this is true, but he said he saw something where he got a pass grade, like a PFF pass blocking grade of 0.
Yeah, which is interesting. I mean, because when you're out there for that many pass blocking attempts and you don't do any of them well, that's a concern.
And in fairness, I will say this. Guess what? Harlow was not supposed to play. That was a bad, I think he got 1 day of practice at left guard when he's literally only been doing center.
Right. And so it's just, I mean, it's just one of those situations that you look at when you, like I said, you you just have to understand that this was a bad game, a bad performance by a lot of people. But at the end of the day, there were some positives. The pass blocking wasn't awful.
They had mistakes in their they didn't have a ton of for most of the line. They weren't beaten in their pass block sets. They had mistakes in protection.
Yeah, and then you add into the fact that they had, like you said, there were three or four plays that didn't fit into or didn't come to fruition, but it wasn't because of like anything crazy. Like you said, Greg Dortch fell down. You had
the wrong shoulder.
Right. Greg Dortch dropped a tough pass, but one that in a game like that, you need him to complete. And so like you look at it from that perspective, it's not too bad. I thought you got a nice game out of Greg Dortch. I thought Marquise Brown played well.
Well, that's the thing with Dortch. So think about this. If you imagine with Rondell coming back at one point, even before Hop gets back, and your 10 personnel has Rondell, it has Marquise, it has Hollywood and AJ on the outside, and Dortch and Rondell inside. That's fun. And then you add in Hopkins, and then you can then sort of make Dortch the gadget guy. What Rondell Moore was used last year. That's what you got Dortch. And that becomes very, very interestingly fun.
Yeah, and it just, like I said, it was disappointing that it happened on a Wednesday and then all of a sudden on Thursday. And I know people will be like, well, why didn't they just change the game plan? But it's like, well, you've gone pretty much all training camp.
And for those of you who know how practice runs, Wednesday is their padded day usually. And that's why like the veterans aren't doing that, because it's their physical one. And so that's when they are doing all the hardest install for what they're doing.
Yeah, and so, like I said, I'm not gonna die about this game. I'm not gonna feel like this is the end of the world. I feel like, there are some things that they can do better, and kind of move on from that. And then on the defense side of the ball, I just wanted to point out, I thought Rashard Lawrence played well. I thought Dennis Gardeck in his limited snaps played well. I thought Zaven Collins played really, really well against the run. And
for the concerns that we had about Marco was pretty solid as well.
Yeah. Marco and Byron, I thought both did okay. It wasn't great. I mean, if you have concerns, the two biggest concerns in this game were that two guys that you're really, really counting on defensively played poorly, and that was Isaiah Simmons and Jalen Thompson. And it's one game against maybe the best or second best offense in the NFL.
And both their running back and their tight end, Travis Kelce especially, he might be the best tight end in all football.
Right.
He's an incredibly difficult matchup. And then you've got a running back who can also do stuff in the passing game with Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Right. And they just did a nice job in the game. And, we talked to Chiefs guys, and they basically said that they felt like this offense was going to be able to be better because they would actually be more multiple and versatile without Tyreek Hill, which seems absurd, right? I mean, but this is literally what they talked about. They talked about that the loss of Tyreek Hill and the additions they made at wide receiver,
Juju and Marquez Valdez-Scantling, so
allow them to do different things while still having maybe some big playabilities. But think about it. Like, they didn't really have any huge plays.
Nope. It was just kept moving the sticks.
Right. I mean, you talked about it off the air. It's literally death by a thousand cuts. And that's what they did.
Yeah. And that's going to be in those are the, as we've seen over the years, like a Sean Payton type offense, which that's what they do. That make is very hard to defend, because then even though a lot of defenses want to make opposing offenses go down the field, you know, 10, 15 plays, because it's more opportunity to make a mistake. The problem is the way that the Chiefs scheme things, there's always somebody open. It's very good because they have all the weapons they have. Sure, they're not as explosive without Tyreek. But when you improve significantly, think about who's getting snaps this year at receiver. So instead of DeMarcus Robinson and Sammy Watkins, now you have Juju Smith-Schuster.
Or Byron Pringle.
Or Byron Pringle. You've got Juju, and you've got Marquez Valdes-Scantling. Juju is a very, very good player. Very good player. And he gives them, my goodness, especially, so they basically can attack you at any point of the field, and you have a legitimate weapon at any level of the defense.
Well, and here's the thing that you look at, and, you know, we can leave our discussion on the Chiefs game after this, but the way you beat the Chiefs is how you beat Tom Brady back in the day. You have to be able to get to him, Patrick Mahomes, with four rushers. And we talked about it early. They had to blitz because they didn't have one guy, let alone four guys, that could get to Patrick Mahomes. And so when you do that, like you said, you're going to have free guys, especially if you are not getting consistent pressure. And like I said, 60% of the dropbacks, they didn't even get a hurry. Yeah. So when you're dropping back and, you know, only 4 out of 10, you're even getting a pressure, like, that's just, you're going to lose no matter who the quarterback is, but you're especially going to lose if it's a guy that's on pace to be one of the five greatest quarterbacks ever.
Coming up next from the Rise FC Red Podcast, especially our Cardinals Talk on the Web, we move past the Chiefs game. What moves do they need to make? What moves do they need to do? What do they need to change to set things straight? That's coming up next from Rise FC Red. We're back on the Rise FC Red Podcast, especially our Cardinals Talk on the Web. And, you know, injuries all over the place. They have injury guards, so they were missing Justin Pugh. They only got a half a game out of Zach Ertz. They're missing J.J. Watt. They're missing Trayvon Mullen. They're missing Antonio Hamilton. That's a lot of guys to be. Obviously, Rondell Moore now. They were already down DeAndre Hopkins. That was they knew entering the season. Does it become a need requirement to make any changes to what they've got? They obviously made the trade for Trayvon Mullen. They made the trade for Cody Ford. Both guys are injured.
Perfect.
What can you do? What can you do? People keep pointing to the defensive line and to cornerback. How essential are moves at those positions?
I mean, they got to get healthy and then kind of see what they have. And if they're not healthy, then they got to do something. I guess that's the only way to look at it, right? Like, we talked about the Watt situation. Like you said, Mullen, they made a trade to go get Mullen. He's dealing with a toe issue, which makes it difficult to judge if they need a corner. But we know that they need a corner. It's just, do they have one on – or one of the two that are, and I know neither of them are on IR, but are, that are basically on IR right now, you know, like, like that, like, how do you decide? So, you know, from that perspective, we'll have to see. I still think that they need to add somebody along the defensive line.
I mean,
but, but who do you add? I mean, that's my big thing.
Ndamukong Suh.
Yeah, I mean,
that's but it's been made very clear by reporters here locally. The Cardinals don't have interest in him. I don't know why you wouldn't have interest in him. He's good. He knows Vance Joseph. He's going to be impactful. Can you imagine, like, a defensive base of Zach Allen and Ndamukong Suh and Zach Allen? I mean, and J.J. Watt.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Now, I don't know if his just asking price is too high, but... But and now the thing is that now that's not week one, you don't have to commit an entire year to him if things don't work out. That's kind of the plus side. So but they keep bringing in other guys. Robert Alford is a name that keeps coming up. Joe Haden. It sounds like, according to Steve Keim, that Robert Alford seems to be not focused on football. His social media seems to suggest otherwise. But the Cardinals haven't had Alford in the building since March. So clearly either they aren't very interested or he's not very interested.
Yeah, and that's the only way you can look at it. I mean, there's nothing else you can do about it. And so if they're not interested in Sue or Alford, then like we need to stop just like harping on it. And at that point, like I said, like, I don't know who's out there that you go sign. I would agree. Like, if you can go get Sue, go do it. I don't know if Alford is the answer because he's obviously dealt with injuries. And I would assume that's what we're as fans wanting to avoid now, right?
Right. He does have the advantage of the fact, one, he knows the defense, and when he's been on the field, he's been quite effective.
Correct.
So that's at least we've seen that. We saw that last year. We saw it in training camp. He looked like the best defensive back they had. But then actually when he played last year, he was sort of the glue of that defensive backfield. His consistently solid play really was critical to their pass defense for much of the year. And so I get why he would make sense. The cornerback market out there, thin. They're old and thin. It's one of the two options. You're either going to be old, at least Alford being old, has knowledge of their defense. Anyone else you bring in has to learn it.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I get it from that perspective, but let's see, you know, obviously, like I said, let's see what Mullen has in Antonio Hamilton before you give up on them. And I think that's kind of where it's at right now. Like, I'm not just, you know, ready to, like I said, just give up and be like, all right, we got to go sign whoever. The defense line thing, I mean, we've been talking about it forever. I would assume that they would have made a move by now if they were going to make a move, but maybe with how game one worked or looked, that reopens the topic. I mean, I don't know what else to say about it, because like you said, like, they've been able to do it if they wanted to for a while. They just have chosen not to.
Right. So, I don't get that at all. All right, well, coming up next on the Rise Up Seared podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web, we will end by talking about the Cardinals Week 2 matchup as they will hit the road to take on the Las Vegas Raiders, the Chandler Jones revenge tour, the Trayvon Mullen revenge tour now. That's coming up next on Rise Up Seared. We're back on the Rise Up Seared podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Cardinals are heading to Las Vegas to take on a Raiders team that lost their season opener to the LA Chargers 24-19. If you look at kind of some of the, you look at how things played out in that game, Derek Carr threw three interceptions. Devontae Adams was a beast to cover. They were very similar. So the Chargers outgained them 355 to 320. They both had both teams had 18 first downs. Vegas was 5-11 on third down. Chargers 6-14. So it wasn't a massive difference. It came down to the Raiders turning the ball over three times and the Chargers not turning the ball over at all. And even as such, the Raiders made a game of it. They were down 14 and made it with a 5-point game by the end of the game. They kept it interesting in there. You look at the pressure numbers. Derek Carr was sacked 6 times. Justin Herbert wasn't sacked at all.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, people are going to harp on the Chandler Jones thing, and you're not wrong because, as we talked about, they don't have anything waiting in the wings. But it's not like he came out and balled out.
He had a hit. So the Raiders total had 3 hits. That's
right.
It.
So they had a worse pass rush in their game statistically than the Cardinals did. You know, it'll be interesting because when you look at how their corners played, the best corner they had in the game was their slot cornerback, Nate Hobbs. He had a good game. Their other corners in Rakia Sin and who else plays corner for this team?
Is that Holy Diablo? Cow.
No, he plays safety. No, he's playing like a linebacker position. It's Nate Hobbs. Oh, Anthony Everett. That's the other one. You know, they didn't have good games, obviously, with Devontae Adams basically still, or sorry, with the Chargers basically getting whatever they wanted. You know, it'll be interesting because, and remember, the Chargers lost Keenan Allen about halfway through that game, wasn't it?
It's true.
And he's still their top guy. It'll be really interesting to see just how this plays out because, you know, you've got a Las Vegas team that definitely made some moves, but I'm not sure if they're good or not. Like, they have really good players. Obviously, Devontae Adams is phenomenal.
Their trio of pass catchers of Adams and Hunter Renfrow and
Darren Waller are very difficult. And it's going to, I mean, their offense is obviously going to cause problem for the Cardinals if you cannot get pressure. I don't think there's any other way around that. You know, that being said, the guys, you know, on their offensive line, you know, weren't great. Colton Miller, who's supposed to be the, you know, their franchise tackle, didn't look great. They kind of had a hodgepodge of guys in the game. Their center was their strong point, but it's not like the Cardinals pass rush comes from up the middle, right? Like, so it'll be interesting to watch because I feel like outside of their pass catchers, which is going to basically be advantage most teams the Cardinals play at this point, right? Like, wouldn't we say right now, like, we're going to be like, oh, the Rams are going to have the advantage. Oh, this, you know, other teams are going to have an advantage right now. Just from a matchup standpoint, it'll come down to if the Cardinals can get consistent pressure on Derek Carr, because we saw in week one, he's pressured.
Carr will make mistakes.
He's prone to mistakes, and he made quite a few mistakes in that game. Like Jess said, he had three interceptions. You know, you look at his passing chart in the game. It wasn't great. He was less than 60% completions. You know, like you said, he was sacked a bunch. It'll be interesting to see how they can get after and generate pressure on Carr at this point, because I think you would agree that that's probably the only way that you can slow down the Raiders offense. And if you do that, you give your offense a break and you give yourself a chance to be successful in this game. But I mean, the Raiders didn't even try to run the ball much. I think they had something like, what did they have? 13 rushing attempts.
Yeah.
And they ran the ball well, don't get me wrong. They 13 carries for 64 yards is not bad, but like, you know, so they had three interceptions. They fumbled the ball three times. They recovered all of them. But like, you look at this team and they're not the level that the Chiefs are, which is, you know, stating the obvious. And so I think it's a better representation of where the Cardinals are as a team in this season, and will give us a better idea of if this is a team that had a one-off bad game or if this is a team that you really, really need to be concerned about for the season.
Right. And what we want to hopefully Mullen is healthy enough to play. Hopefully Ertz is back to a full load. Hopefully Marcus Golden is back to a full load and that J.J. Watt can play. You get all those four players playing and or playing a full load, you feel much better about your chances. And if you look at the defensive metrics for the Raiders last game, there's nothing absolutely to write home about because they didn't force any turnovers. They didn't get pressure. They only got their hand on one pass all the entire game. So they had the only one pass breakup. And yes, they held the Chargers to 43% on third down. You look at across the board, it's this, you know, you think that the Cardinals, because the Chargers offense, I mean the Raiders offense, as dangerous as it is not, it's not. It is not the Chiefs offense. Not nearly as consistent. They are dangerous, but they're not nearly as consistent as the Chiefs are. It's just ridiculous how well oiled that Chiefs offense looked, and that was not the case for the Raiders last week. Although I do worry, being their home opener, that they'll have a little extra juice that way. But that said, you know, the Cardinals tackles played well, So the tandem of Chandler Jones and Max Crosby is going to be mitigated a little bit, though I you'll have to say that duo is better than the duo of Carlos Dunlap and Frank Clark for the Chiefs.
Yeah, definitely, and they'll offer a different challenge, but I think their defense,
but they also don't have a Chris Jones in the middle.
Right, I think their defense is worse. They do have a, like you said, a better pass rush unit, but they didn't do a great job against the Chargers. And that's not to say that the Chargers don't have, you know, a good pass blocking unit themselves. When you look at it, you know, they have a good group. It's just that they, you know, I think it'll be interesting to see what Chandler has left. How much Chandler has left. I'm sure in this game, he'll have a little more, right?
I'm but, sure he will.
But overall, I mean, I'm not nearly as concerned about this game as I was in the Chiefs game.
Yeah, that, if we're gonna make a prediction, what are you thinking?
What are you thinking for this game?
It's just so hard to tell right now because, you know, it's Tuesday. We don't have an injury report till tomorrow. We're not getting really any information on who's going to play. You know, I'm confident in the Cardinals if they're healthy, meaning Watt, Pugh, and Moore can all play. I'm more confident in the Cardinals than if they're not playing. If they're not playing, then I honestly don't even know what to make of this team. Like, I don't think that they can win if those three are not on the field.
I'm going to say that's kind of the same boat that we're in. I can't imagine that the Cardinals are going to look that bad again for the second week in a row. They're a more proud team than that. And the Raiders did improve down the stretch. That said, I think it will be a close game, and I'm going to give the Cardinals a 27-24 victory in this one.
Yeah, and like I said, if they're healthy, I can see them winning this one 31-23. You know, if they're not healthy, I think it's going to be a tough one. You can see it going like 27-21 the other way.
Yeah, either way, it could go that way. But you know, if we want to look at the quarterbacks, are we going to get a Kyler Murray who played this like he did last week? Can the defense force Derek Carr to make mistakes? He can make mistakes. Derek Carr is another one of those quarterbacks where you're like, he's good, but is he good? He's good.
Yeah.
But is he great? No, he's not a great quarterback. He's a very good quarterback. Kirk Cousins, he's kind of on that same level, I think. But he is who he is. And there's nothing wrong with that. He's definitely good for that team. His teammates love him. The organization loves him. You can win with him. But Cardinals kind of need this win. And I think we're at the point, I think we need to see them over the fact by the end of week three. 0-3 is a disaster, isn't even necessarily a disaster. It's a disaster if they look, it's a disaster if there are things going as badly as it did in week one. If they lose the next two games but look good, I'm cautiously optimistic, but even still. The Cardinals really, for all intents and purposes, need to get one of these next two games, preferably two, because then that means you're winning at home against a division rival. But you don't want to go an 0-2 into facing the Rams in case they, you know, we know what their ceiling is. We don't want them to get better against the Cardinals.
Yeah, and I just actually came across something that one of the starting cornerbacks for the Raiders is actually out for this game. Oh. The Averett guy, he was placed on IR with a thumb injury. So
that's why they picked up Javelin Guidry.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. You don't really know until these things come out. And so, yeah, one of their starting corners is out. So we'll see how this goes. I mean, obviously if Rondell is healthy, it gives the Cardinals an even bigger boost, and that's what you want to see.
And then hopefully they incorporate Hollywood and AJ Moore this game. Yep. That'd be good.
Yep.
All right. And that'll wrap up this edition of the Rise of Sea Red podcast. About our Cardinals talk on the web. This has been episode 372. As of course, we will be back again next week as we are in regular season form now, talking weekly, talking about the game that happened. Hopefully we're talking about a Cardinals team that has bounced back and picked up their first win of the year, going 1-1 as they face the Las Vegas Raiders. Hopefully DJ Humphries and Kelvin Beachum put Chandler Jones in his place, and Kyler has a big game and all that sort of stuff, and then we can then move ahead and not worry about this team being a disaster, because I don't think this team is a disaster team, but we'll have to see.
Yeah, that's the goal right now.
All right, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. This is Rise Up Sea Red Podcast. Thanks for listening. As always, we'll be back again next week.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise Up Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.
Whoa!